Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Juan Williams has quite the resume, quite the history. Big books on the civil rights era, on black farmers, black religious experience, Thurgood Marshall. Years at the Washington Post, a decade with NPR, and then last fall, a blow-up with NPR, a firing, after Williams said he felt nervous when he saw people in Muslim garb on an airplane. Now Juan Williams is front and center with Fox News and talking about free speech and honest debate. This hour on Point, Juan Williams is with us. You can join the conversation. How did you see the Juan Williams saga? What's your question for him now on American debate, free speech, tough politics, and the news? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Juan Williams joins me now from Washington, political analyst for Fox News and former senior correspondent and analyst for NPR. He's also a columnist for FoxNews.com and senior editor for The Hill, author way back of the companion book to the great civil rights documentary Eyes on the Prize of Thurgood Marshall, American Revolutionary, and his latest new book, Muzzled, The Assault on Honest Debate. Juan Williams, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
How's life with Fox News?
Fine. In fact, I'm pretty happy there. I mean, it's an interesting moment given all the Republican politics that are percolating around. So my job as a political analyst is pretty interesting at the moment.
Your firing a year ago was rough and tough. I don't know anybody who thinks that it was well done. And, of course, there were a lot of consequences for NPR and for yourself in the aftermath. And of course, as you tell the story and as people heard it, the comment that you made on the show, famous show, infamous show, I'm not sure what you want to call it, you were driving to make the point that you shouldn't judge people just by how they look or who they are, I guess trying to convince Bill O'Reilly of that. Do you think that point came across before the whole shooting match was over last fall, Juan? When you talk to people, do they understand what you were on about there?
Well, it depends. If they saw it or heard it, even if they read it, Tom, they understand it because it's right there. It's not as if it was, appended later as if I was trying to correct a misimpression. To the contrary, it was very evident right there that I was saying that America is a land of religious liberty and that we have to, despite the anxiety we may feel about the very real connection between radical Islam and terrorism, we have to protect the civil liberties of all, including Muslim Americans. So that was there. I mean, it's not like I'm making it up or trying to, revise the reality that was said at that moment. I've never had an in-the-shower moment, Tom, where I say, oh, my gosh, if I'd only said it differently. Nothing like that at all. So, but people who didn't and who received this as something that was taken as a singular comment out of context that I said I was nervous when I see people dressed in Muslim garb when I'm getting on an airplane, several people say, well, that sounds like bigotry, which is what my boss at NPR said. She didn't say it sounds like. She said it was. And then, of course, people say, well, even if it wasn't, why would you say such a thing? It contributes to the spread of bigotry. Mm-hmm. But this is typically from people who have not heard, seen, listened or read the entirety of the debate.
If we go back and look at that, this happened, it was on Fox News, it was on Bill O'Reilly's show. It was after that he had been on The View and Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar had walked off after he said, because, he didn't want the Islamic Community Center near Lower Manhattan because he said, because Muslims killed us on 9/11. And the broad stroke implication of, not radical Muslims or not Islamic fundamentalists, just Muslims is what upset those people. And then he had you on his show, Juan, to talk about exactly that, to say, Juan, was I wrong?
Correct. And I thought that was pretty open, given, a lot of the preconceptions people have about Fox and Bill O'Reilly. Here was Bill O'Reilly opening himself up to me and saying, so tell me how I was wrong. And I then constructed an argument in which I said, look, Bill, I'm not going to play politically correct games with you. The fact is that the people who attacked us on 9/11 were Muslim and, in fact, cited their faith, said that they were acting in the spirit of a jihad against the United States. So there's no getting away from that. And that's when I then said, You know, when I'm, you know, 10 years later yesterday, Tom, and I said, look, you know, when I'm getting on an airplane, if I see people dressed in Muslim garb, it makes me nervous. Not only given what happened at the Twin Towers, the Pentagon here in Washington and Pennsylvania, but Madrid, London, the subsequent shoe bomber, I could go on. But the point is that to my mind, there's a real connection. So I said that, and then I went on to say, but basically, I don't draw negative conclusions about all Christians based on Timothy McVeigh, and I think it would be corrupt for us to say that all Muslims are to be judged as extremist or terrorist, given the behavior of the Muslims who attacked us on 9/11, that was extreme. And I also added in that context that it's really important for us to be careful about the way we speak. And I said that because at that point, there were, you know, great concern over the pastor down in Florida who wanted to burn the Koran, mm-hmm. about a cab mm-hmm. driver in New York who'd had his throat slashed because mm-hmm. some passenger perceived him to be a Muslim. This was all said, and I don't know if you have a copy there of all that was said, but it's all said at the time, Tom.
We've got it. Let's listen just for a second. Here it is. This is back to that passage, and then we'll play a little more just after. But here's Juan Williams on the show, as described with Bill O'Reilly.
Look, political correctness can lead to some kind of paralysis where you don't address reality. I mean, look, Bill, I'm not a bigot. You know the kind of books I've written about the civil rights movement in this country. But when I get on a plane, I got to tell you, if I see people who are in Muslim garb, and I think, you know, they're identifying themselves first and foremost as Muslims, I get worried. I get nervous.
And then the conversation gets messy. There's back and forth. But Juan Williams trying to drive toward this point with Bill O'Reilly.
Because if you said, what, Timothy McVeigh, the Atlanta bomber, these people who are protesting against homosexuality at military funerals, very obnoxious, you don't say first and foremost, we got a problem with Christians.
Because
that'd be
it
crazy.
Did, but it's not at that level. It doesn't rise near
Correct.
To that level.
That's and when you said in the Talking Points memo a moment ago that there are good Muslims, I think that's a point.
Juan Williams there, what, a year ago now, Juan, with Bill O'Reilly. And within how many hours was it, Juan, that you were fired?
I can't count that quickly,
Tom.
The construct is this happens on a Monday night.
Yeah.
I fly off to Chicago the next day, you know, in fact, have encounters with people who are dressed in Muslim garb at the airport who tell me, thank goodness for that conversation you had with O'Reilly last night. I'm approached by a man who tells me I wouldn't know he was Muslim because he's just mm-hmm. dressed like a businessman who tells mm-hmm. me that, you know, he's had an encounter with his child recently where he realized that he needs to do more to get publicly involved in changing the image of Muslims in America and wants to be more politically active and thanks me for the conversation. This all takes place on a Tuesday. No sign of any trouble as far as I know. And then on Wednesday, I get a call from a friend who says, how are you doing? How are you taking all this criticism? I said, what is it about? And she said, oh, it's about emails that have been flying around her office calling for me to be fired for my bigotry. And I'm saying, what is this? Don't worry about it. You know, my job is as a political commentator to say what I think. And people on the left and right typically come after me for one reason or another because I don't fit neatly in anybody's box. Don't worry about it. And then it was late on Wednesday night. So I would guess then, by that count time, almost 48 hours after I had made the comment that I was fired and told that I was a bigot, and even after 10 years, that I couldn't come in and have a face-to-face meeting. There was nothing I could say, nothing I could do that would change NPR's opinion.
And now you've got a book called Muzzled. You're writing about honest debate in this country and the potential restraints on it. And I want to get to that. I want to look at that in a lot more. But let me just ask you to stick with this for just a second, because they were uncomfortable with the first part of what you said there. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that seriously, because you go on to make a point that is about treating people without preconception. But I just wonder if you turn the clock back, you've written a lot about the civil rights era. If you had somebody in the civil rights era who prefaced their maybe a good-natured remark saying, you know, hey, Juan, I'm uncomfortable with blacks on the bus, or I'm uncomfortable with uppity blacks at the lunch counter, but, would that be okay? Or are those even parallel?
They are parallel. Well, it's interesting to me. I've encountered this now. The ombudsman, former ombudsman at NPR and others, including some leading liberal lights, have raised this point. I think the idea being to undermine my credibility. And, you know, again, they're using race here. I'd never brought race into it, but I'm black. And They say, you know, in the example that they use, Tom, is if I heard a white man say that he was walking down the street late at night and saw some rowdy black kids and said he was fearful or crossed the street or hit the lock on his car door, wouldn't I accuse that white man of bigotry? And the answer is no. I would think he was street smart. I'm black. I live in a mostly black city, Washington, D.C., and I engage in the very same behavior. I don't think it's bigotry. I think it's concern for my safety. So especially given black-on-black crime rates in America, I don't have to make any excuse for that. So I just think that that's not a legitimate point, but I understand where it comes from. I mean, it's just like, you know, when you were introducing this segment and you say people have trouble with the way it was handled, as if, well, wait a second, there's no problem with the idea that there was justifiable reason to fire me. And I just think there was no justifiable reason, as we have just, you know, gone over that in terms of what I said. I do not believe I'm a bigot. I don't even think I'm close.
Well, it gets into the whole question of just how wide open we can be in our debate and discussion of the big problems in front of our country right now. We're going to come back.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah, we're going to come. We've got to take a short break here, Juan, but we're going to come back and look at that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Fox News political analyst, former NPR reporter and analyst, Juan Williams, about American politics, the news, and free speech now. His new book is Muzzled, The Assault on Honest Debate. Spent a decade with NPR, was fired last fall after the incident we've been talking about. Back in the day, it was Juan Williams very, very often on NPR. Here he is, last summer, 2010, talking with NPR's Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition.
NPR news analyst Juan Williams is following the story. Juan, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
What makes people suspicious of Alvin Green?
Oh, where do I start? Let's see. He's living at home with his 81-year-old dad. He's unemployed. He didn't run a campaign. He didn't run any ads. He didn't have a website. He was using the public library to send and receive emails.
Not that there's anything wrong with a public library. But
Yes. I'm a big supporter.
It was all happy going, at least on the radio then. But that did not last, as you've just been hearing. And then it got ugly. The then NPR CEO Vivian Schiller was questioned about the press on why Juan Williams was fired for his statements on Fox News, The O'Reilly Factor.
Juan feels the way he feels. That is not for me to pass judgment on. That is really his feelings that he expressed on Fox News are really between him and his, you know, psychiatrist or his publicist or take your pick. But it is not compatible with a news analyst on and with the role of a news analyst on NPR's air.
She's gone, he's gone, and he went out angry. Here he was on the O'Reilly Factor defending himself after those comments, saying some opinions are more equal than others at NPR.
Have you no shame, madam? You and your far-left mob fired me. Wasn't that enough for you? Do you have to try to assassinate my character, too? For the record, Ms. Schiller issued a so-called apology to the press, not a word to me. And that probably tells you everything you need to know about her.
Everything you need to know about her. Far-left mob, Juan Williams, is with us today from Washington, D.C. His book is Muzzled, The Assault on Honest Debate. And I found a lot of things interesting in here, Juan, but you kind of stopped me right at your dedication. Because, I mean, people are going to judge the quality of discourse in different outlets in the American media every which way these days. But you write right up front, this book is dedicated to Crown Books, the publisher, and others. But Fox News, ellipses, standing tall in the faith that speaking the truth is the heart of great journalism. Now, there can be all kinds of critique of NPR. You've made them. Others have as well. We can do it here today. But Fox News is As the paragon of standing tall in the faith that speaking the truth is the heart of great journalism, is that how you feel?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, after I had been abandoned by and condemned by NPR, Tom, it was Crown Books, it was the Hill newspaper here in Washington, it was Fox News, who all gave me a platform to continue being a journalist, and said that they saw what I had done, heard what I had done, reviewed what I had done, and did not accuse me of bigotry. To the contrary, said that it was an assault on honest debate that anybody would try to shut me up, personally attack me in the way that I was attacked and then fire me.
But, I mean, Fox News could have hired you anytime. They gave you a nice contract. Congratulations.
Oh, no, Fox News. Remember, I was working for Fox before I was working for NPR. Right, so I was working for them all the time.
Right, but if they had come in with that $2 million contract, I don't know, some earlier point you might have done it. Were they not, in part, you described them as standing up for truth and good journalism here, but were they not in part tweaking NPR by hiring you full-time, bringing you in their tent just at the moment when you're having your big blow-up?
I was in the tent. That's what I was trying to explain to you. I was working for Fox as far back as 1997 is when I first had a contract with Fox. And when NPR hired me in 2000, I was, you know, there on Fox all the time. So my role subsequent to this firing, Tom, has increased, and my pay has increased, but largely increased to make up for the money I lost by being fired by NPR.
So let me ask you, and this is the subject of your book, but how big a problem do you think what you describe as political correctness, constraining, open, free-flowing, honest debate in this country, how big a problem is that? We've just been through a period where there is pretty hot debate on all kinds of issues. Do you really feel like we're screwed down into some kind of, uptight, impossible to really discuss our issues moment here in America?
I think it's important to discern a difference between free speech rights, First Amendment rights, and honest debate. We don't have any problem with free speech and First Amendment rights, and you hear the most outrageous things said in this country. And the Supreme Court recently has even affirmed, Tom, that, things like the most violent video games can be sold to children, or that campaign contributions can be made anonymously as a matter of free speech. Hmm. And that the Westboro Baptist Church folks who go on with those what I consider to be offensive rants against gay people at military funerals, that they have a right to do so. So free speech has been heavily, heavily protected, affirmed by the Roberts Court. I don't think that's a problem in America. And you can hear it on much of, I think, conservative talk radio. People say the most outrageous things. And then, of course, people complain about conservative talk radio. But then, of course, conservatives complain about what goes on in terms of Hollywood and the like. All of that's out there to be seen, reviewed, pornography, all alike, is there. Okay, that's not the problem. It's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about in mm-hmm. Muzzled, what I'm talking about with you today, Tom, mm-hmm. is honest debate. And that's where people feel they have to bite their tongues, they have to censure themselves, they shouldn't say certain things because it could be misinterpreted. Or, if I say that, somebody could say I'm a bigot, or I'm a racist, I'm an idiot, or why am I even talking to crazy right-wingers, or why am I talking to those bleeding heart tax and spend liberals? I don't want to have that conversation. People tuning into shows that simply reaffirm pre-existing attitudes, opinions, but don't expose them to contrary opinions and different points of view. This happens all the time in America, and I think the result is there's very limited honest debate, very limited honest interaction. You listen to the Republican debates that I mentioned to you earlier.
You mean just last week, Juan, or over the summer?
Yeah, sure.
Or,
listen to them talk about things like immigration or the budget deficit in this country, and it's so incredibly bizarre to me. I mean, on immigration, they act as if we don't have 12 million illegal people living in this country. They're talking about walls that even by Mitt Romney's, your former governor up in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. says it wouldn't stop illegal immigration. There are still people, half of the people who come in the country illegally just overstay visas. But yet they talk about the wall as if it's the be all and end all in terms of solving the problem. People don't talk in terms of solutions. They yell at each other.
Is that constrained by political correctness in that case, Juan, on that issue, just for an example of what you're talking about?
I think it's constrained by people speaking to the base. In other words, it's a very limited conversation, Tom, among a limited group of people, especially then in that context. He's speaking and trying to persuade the Tea Party supporters that they can, in fact, trust him, that he is one of them.
And he won't talk about more nuance here because they don't want to hear it, you're saying.
Correct. And so it's a very limited conversation among a limited group of people. It's not an honest discussion because he, by his own admission, knows that that wall won't stop anything. So what's going on here? And it's not limited to the right. I mean, you hear this on the left as well. And to me, this is the tragedy that people in the middle, people who are wanting to say, here, Tom, is what I think. Tom, what do you think? And tell me where I'm wrong, or let me tell you where I think I'm wrong or you're wrong or whatever. Let's try to learn from each other in service to good ideas rising to the top and providing solutions for America. We're treated like we're weak-kneed, no spine, stupid, or not a good commentator because you're not strong and you're not saying the most provocative, enraging thing that would please your base and antagonize and demonize mm-hmm. the other side. This, to me, is corrupting honest debate in America.
We can all feel the possibility of that. And, you know, it's hard to reach down into yourself and sometimes, I think, and figure out how can I be completely honest and at the same time, what? You looked at the civil rights era. We didn't want to perpetuate endlessly old kind of myths and stereotypes and prejudices by hurtful comments. I mean, is there a place for that, Juan, or not? You know what that was like for African Americans. You know how words were used for hundreds of years to keep a whole people in a particular place that wasn't a good one.
Oh, absolutely. And I think words still have that power to belittle, to dehumanize people, Tom. Please don't misunderstand me. But what's important here is beyond words. In other words, I want you to be able to speak your mind. If you have the concept, let's say, speaking to me as a black person, say, well, you know, black people really aren't that smart, or black people are lazy or not that patriotic, any of these, you know, to my mind, very pernicious stereotypes. Okay. And then I would be able to talk to you and say, Tom, you know, I just don't agree. I think, and I'm interested in what evidence you have for this. I want to discuss that evidence. If you want to talk test scores, if you want to talk military service, let's talk about it. Let's get it out on the table. And hopefully that you are a person who is open to persuasion. But even if you're not, Tom, I'm not afraid of it because I think others listening to the discussion will be able to draw their own conclusions and that some truth will emerge from a very free-flowing, honest debate.
Let's get it all on the table, says Juan Williams. His new book is Muzzled, The Assault on Honest Debate. Joins us today from Washington, D.C. And Juan, we've got a lot of listeners who want to speak with you. If I may, let me begin to go to them. Middleboro, Massachusetts. Margie, you're on the air with Juan Williams. Margie, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. And hello to Mr. Williams. I'd like to say I'm a great admirer of Juan Williams. I always have been. If I were to watch Fox News at any point in the past, before the incident where he was fired, it would have been because he was on, which I felt led credibility to Fox News. I don't believe for one second that he is a bigot. I appreciate the work he's done in his career to show that he isn't and to expose people who are. I believe I have seen in its entirety the segment with Bill O'Reilly, and I believe that was a turning point. I believe some Tumblr clicked into place where perhaps only in that moment he became, in that segment, maybe a somewhat shrill, I'm sorry to say that, opinion spouter, a Fox News opinion spouter, which I don't think can be reconciled with being an NPR journalist. And I think that had a lot to do with why he was fired. I hope he's doing well. I will look for his book, and I still appreciate his work. I just think he's the one who changed the nature of his career with that type of presentation. And so I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Margie?
No, Margie, stay with us for just a second because I really appreciated your comment. I thought it was very serious, and I take it to heart. I will say this to you, that there are, you know, there's a big difference between cable news and NPR, as NPR talk radio like Tom's show. Obviously, in terms of the time that Tom is giving me or that even the time I had when I'm talking to people on Morning Editions, all things considered, and the role that I play there as a political analyst, very different than when I'm on a primetime cable news talk show where the debate is rather fierce and intense and people are, you know, interrupting you constantly to make other points. And you know, it's a lot of sound bites and all the rest at work. And visuals count. So it's a very different medium.
But what about Margie's point? And I'm sorry, Juan, she dropped on us here. But
oh, okay.
What about her point that by your work in that Fox arena, you were somehow absorbing some of that coloring that you're describing right there, and that it was or is in some way antithetical to what NPR does or should or whatever do? You're Margie's view.
No. Well, this is what I was going to driving at in saying that to Margie was that I had latitude at NPR as their political news analyst. That was the whole idea, that I wasn't the straight news reporter anymore, that I was someone who was brought on and allowed to voice opinions, thoughts, to say what people were telling me on background and all the rest. When I was fired, it was said that I violated NPR standards of journalism, and that, much like Margie's comment, that given that I was expressing a feeling, not even an opinion, because it's a feeling that I have in terms of that anxiety when I'm getting on the planes and all what we've been through, Tom, that therefore I no longer was able to function as an NPR journalist. That was the hardest point that the NPR management made. And again, let me just reiterate that as a news analyst for NPR, the whole idea was that I was supposed to voice opinions. I was supposed to be given additional latitude, very different than someone who is a straight news reporter. And when I'm in an opinion arena, and here I am jousting with people, and I, you know, I'm not buying into anything. I think it's just a matter of saying, in many cases, here's what I'm hearing, what I'm reporting, what I know to be true that's different than what I'm hearing from you, or being open to say, yes, you're right on a certain point, as I did with O'Reilly about the fact that the people who attacked us on 9/11 were, in fact, Muslim and acting on the basis of their faith. That's all, to me, legitimate journalism. I don't see it as corrupting. I don't see it as, therefore, changing me. I've written books. I've written columns. I've certainly been on the air. You know, I hosted Talk of the Nation for...
Sure.
Yeah, so good, I don't...
Long
I don't
while, but was it...
Right.
I mean, her point is, she says, you know, in that moment, to her, you sounded like an opinion spouter in a way that couldn't be reconciled with being on NPR. I mean, was it just an impossible straddle for some real reason, one? You're describing how this cable world is a different world. Was that somehow just impossible tonally to maintain that straddle, if it was a straddle for you?
Well, it wasn't impossible for me. I think there were people in the audience, Tom, who raised questions about it. But here's the way the question was posed. Why is a prominent NPR personality also a prominent Fox News personality? And this tells you something about the age we live in and what I consider to be niche journalism, that people were saying, oh, well, wait a minute. They preconceived NPR to be the left, Fox to be the right. And so how can one journalist be in both environments? The idea that, you know what, I'm the same person in both environments and I perform different functions at times, as I say, mm-hmm. as a debating partner for some strong, dominant personalities in primetime on Fox, or as someone who is, you know, benefiting from 30 years as a journalist in Washington with lots of sources, contacts, and perspective for NPR. There were some people who said, well, wait a second, that doesn't make sense, but it was a fact. And most of the audience at NPR didn't have any trouble with it. Most of the audience at Fox didn't have any trouble with it. In fact, it kept coming back to this. Well, if you're on the right, if you're talking to a right-wing personality, that means you shouldn't be working on the left. Or if you're working with a left-wing organization, why is it that you're working on the right? To me, this is where we've come to now, that people just want everybody in a box. They don't want their journalists to be sufficiently independent to cross that line. And this is for some people, not for everyone. But I think that what the reality of our age is that the harsh partisans, the people who are the most political, are the ones who now dictate conversation. And again, it inhibits honest debate in America. And that's what the book is about.
Juan Williams talking straight up, straight out there. You know, it's funny. James Rainey, who you quote in the book with the LA Times media guy there, you quote him in a supportive way. But he says, look, if Juan Williams muzzled, are you kidding me? He said, you know, your book is called Muzzled. He says, why not a John Boehner tell-all, No Tears, or a Beyonce concert tour, Ugly Me? He looks at you and says he doesn't see a muzzled man.
Well, it's not muzzled in terms of my ability now to write this book or appearing on Fox News or through your gracious invitation here on, you know, On Point, but muzzled in terms of being fired for simply saying a feeling, that's muzzled. That's, in other words, the microphone was cut off for me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with Fox News political analyst, former NPR reporter and analyst Juan Williams, about American politics, the news, and free speech and candor now. Juan's new book is Muzzled, The Assault on Honest Debate. Juan joins us today from Washington, D.C. And boy, have we got a lot of response online. Here's one, Juan. This is from Heraclitus, who's sort of taking off on what you said that ended up with you fired. He's kind of, here's a mocking view of it. He says, this is him paraphrasing you, but he says, hey, when I run into Fox News, I got to tell you, if I see people in journalistic garb and think, you know, they're identifying themselves first and foremost as journalists, I get worried, I get nervous. says that goes for moralizing too. And Bob Reardon says, no question NPR proceeded irrationally and quite unfairly, but Juan, why Fox? To me, Bob writes, they have a high, very high disregard for responsible editorial and debate, much less journalism. We'll come to that. Let's get to the phones. Mark in Naugatuck, Kentucky, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Juan. I just want to like say that my heart goes out to you because I consider myself to have been blessed with a fully functioning brain that's capable of independent thought. And I both listen to NPR, and I watch Fox News. You know, I mean, I love Huckabee's show, actually, there. You know, I'm a Democrat, but I'm always interested in getting both sides of the story, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for someone who expresses his honest feelings. I abhor racism, but I'll be the first to admit that if I'm walking down the street and I see a group of thuggish black teenagers come to me, I'm a lot more likely to cross the street than if it's a bunch of thuggish-looking white teenagers.
Hey, Mark, well, that's interesting. Let me just ask you, though, Mark, what does that mean? If two groups of thugs, one is white, one is black, you say they look thuggish. Of course, there's also what looks thuggish to you, but if they both do...
Yeah, what looks thuggish? I mean, that's purely subjective, and that's why I'm saying, like, you know, For Juan to express his honest feeling at seeing someone who had, who resembled someone who had harmed us in the past, that's a perfectly honest and legitimate opinion that shouldn't have been punished. I mean,
Mark, let me take it up with Juan. Juan, respond to that right there. Two groups of thuggish-looking guys to our caller Mark's view coming down the street, one white, one black. He's crossing the street from the black group. Now, is this just a good, you know, open, honest conversation, or is he demonstrating that he's got prejudice there because he wants these thugs, not those thugs? What?
I think it's a legitimate point to make, and I'm glad that he feels free on your show to express it and to allow us to discuss it, because if you're going to look at absolute numbers, at least, you know, where I live in Washington, D.C., if you look nationally, the incarceration rates in terms of violent crime and all the rest, there's sad to say, a disproportionate amount of it in the black community. So
he's got white thuggish-looking guys, too. Right?
Right. He did. But again, I don't know his race. I imagine that he's white. But let's say that he is. And I don't know where he's living or what the context is. But I'm not sure that the conclusion that you seem to be reaching, Tom, is true, which is that he's saying they're exactly the same in the same context at the same moment. Because in much the way that I would say, well, you know what, if I was confronting a group of, you know, tough-looking, you know, to me, thuggish-looking white guys, you better believe I'd move away, too. You know, I mean, move away for reasons of personal safety, not to offend anybody.
It's interesting terrain out there in this country with all of our different races and the prejudices we bring to it as well.
That's true. Absolutely. And that's why I think it's important to discuss it rather than tell people, oh, you're not allowed to say that. Or if you say that, you're a bad person. You're going to be called a bigot, a racist. Shut up. Don't say it. Just, you know, let it fester in your mind. I think when the things fester, that's when you get like this guy down in Florida who wanted to burn the Koran, not understanding the implications for our troops overseas and for our relations with Muslim Americans who had done nothing wrong. What are you doing?
Yeah, but when this stuff gets raised, you better talk it all the way through because it can stand there.
Right, so that's why I think it's great to talk it through. I'm all for honest debate, honest discussion, and that's what I'm saying. I think that right now the way that we behave, the way that we talk is so limited in large part because we allow the extremes. We allow the extreme left and the extreme right to dominate. And if you vary from their orthodoxy, then you are in danger of being, well, ostracized, told that you're a bad person, and in my case, fired.
Joy in Hull, Massachusetts. Joy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Juan. I don't know whether I'd be considered far left or not, but I am certainly left, and I do miss Juan Williams. I don't listen to Fox. I really don't find a lot to appreciate. But I do think that is what was in the mix when he was fired. I think they were waiting for an excuse. And I was very disappointed because the dialogue that could go on, and in fact, this whole hour, instead of dealing with the racism or the fear or the emotions that everyone or many people experience in their daily life, and certainly after the seriousness of September 11th and other terrorist events, it would have been so much more valuable to talk and discuss those feelings. They exist. We've spent a whole year or more on doubting the birth of the President of the United States. It's due to racist and emotionally reactive thinking.
Yeah,
and
Joy, may I ask you?
I don't think enough time is spent.
Yeah, sort of working
in
through it.
Exploration, and I think we are light years away from doing that. And until we do it, and until people aren't fired,
mm-hmm.
but rather those events and those reactions or those emotions are used as teaching moments or teaching hours, we are going to stay frozen in time.
Is anybody big enough, good enough, nuanced, and supple enough to do that, to work, let's say, NPR and Fox News and pull it off for a long time, Joy?
I don't know. I would exclude the whole Fox News thing. I think NPR, which stands alone with public radio, you know, GBH as well, presenting discussions, presenting educational moments, presenting, you know, transformational ideas, should have used it in a way that would have benefited society, not as a political tool, not as a reactive or a reactionary kind of response. I know many people who felt that fear and were ashamed of it, knowing that, of course, they would be labeled racist.
Yeah,
but they had that fear. Those are the images that people have grown up with.
You wanted to work through on NPR, where Juan Williams was, and I appreciate that. Joy, thanks for your call. Greenville, South Carolina. Shell, you're on the air with Juan Williams.
Hi, Tom. Hey, first of all, I kind of agree with the previous caller, you know, but I can tell you this. Juan Williams, I was kind of expecting him once he got on, you know, once he got on the Fox, gave him a raise to, you know, kind of roll back his truthfulness. And the guy speaks nothing but truth. I'm an African-American. I consider myself, I guess, a Democrat or whatever.
Okay.
But the guy doesn't speak nothing but truth. And can't nobody say that he doesn't. You know, and for the fact that he was fired from NPR, you know, that kind of made me a little bit upset, because I knew, I understand what he was saying. I'm black, too, and
All right.
I live in the show.
All right.
But let me explain this to you. But for Juan Williams to... I hope that he didn't start drinking the Fox News Kool-Aid, because for him to get on there and say, oh, yeah, Fox News is the pinnacle of...
The heart of great journalism.
That is about as stupid as... Now, to me, it sounds like he's trying to make us feel like now we're the ones stupid. He knows everything about what real good journalism is, because NPR is the only station I know in this world at this point that is really, truly independent. And I just hope NPR doesn't start getting all fearful about these, and start, you know, trying to be not trying to walk down the middle of the road like they should, like they've always been. There's nothing wrong with NPR, and if he feels it anyway that NPR is far left, then I think he is beginning to drink that Kool-Aid, and that's what bothered me. But I've been listening to him since he made that comment, and I do think that he has stood his ground on Fox News and has continued to be independent.
Juan, what do you say to Shell? Shell, thanks for calling. Juan, what do you say?
Well, I appreciate the comment. I mean, I said, we discussed this earlier, Tom, in the dedication of the book, that I appreciated the fact that Fox had not turned away from me and had taken into, the full context, the full statement, understood what was said, and had said, you know, you have a right as a journalist to speak your truth. I haven't changed from left to right or whatever. I don't try to cater to one orthodoxy or another.
But you say Fox News standing tall in the faith that speaking the truth is the heart of great journalism. And our caller, Shell, says you're drinking the Kool-Aid if you think that's what's going on there.
Well, I disagree. I think that Fox News clearly allowed me to continue to work as a journalist, did not label me a bigot, and didn't throw me out the door, which is what NPR did. So in that regard, which is exactly what I am, you know, expressing gratitude for in that dedication, I'm saying thank you. Not only to Fox, but to the Hill newspaper here in Washington, to Crown Books that published Muzzle, The Assault on Honest Debate, and to FoxNews.com that publishes online columns that I write. You don't understand, Tom. I was fired, as I said to you earlier.
The microphone was removed. Yeah, no, right. That part, right. Loud and clear, very clear, but the characterization of Fox among these others, I think, is what Shell was speaking to there. And
well, I don't think this... Look, Shell's on target if he thinks that especially the prime time programs, the opinion programs on Fox, are clearly more conservative than anything. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know, we can have a discussion if he wants to talk about some of the quality of the daily news reporting. I think people, you know, Ed Henry just came over from CNN. When I look at the people who cover things like, you know, the courts and the Hill, I think that this is first-class reporting. So is there a clear, discernible, conservative posture to the primetime programming on Fox, people like Sean Hannity? No doubt about it. You'd have to be blind not to see it. But if you're asking me about the fact that they did not turn away from me at a moment when I was, when my career as a journalist was about to end, I don't think, I am extremely grateful that Fox didn't want to limit my ability to speak about my feelings or opinions. And they've never, ever, by the way, Tom, told me, you can say this, you can't say this, or you know what, you're too liberal for us. Never said that to me. Mm-hmm.
Atlanta, Georgia. Shell, thanks for your call. Tony in Atlanta, Georgia, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi, Juan. Good to hear your voice. My question is kind of similar. Do you think that liberals are more quick to apologize and knee-jerk react to these types of statements and issues? And I'm thinking back also to the Obama administration's dismissal, and I'm going to show my forgetfulness here, of the woman from the Agriculture Department who was quoted out of context on the blog. And before investigating thoroughly, they dismissed her. And in the same way, so do you perceive that liberals are more quick to knee-jerk react and react the way that NPR did in your circumstance, as the Obama administration did? And conversely, is the conservative media more willing to just poo-poo things and say, oh, you're just reading things out of context? And I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess that's kind of who's less tolerant or who's more ready to let somebody go if they appear to be, you know, out of bounds by whatever definition. Juan, what do you think?
I think that's right. I think that there is and one of the things that has really, I think, gone off like a light in my mind is, you know, as someone who grew up as a black liberal in Brooklyn, New York, you know, in the midst of the, you know, late 60s, early 70s with the Archie Bunker error and always thinking that it's the right that's so rigid, I've come to now think, you know, it's the left that if you vary at all from what they take to be acceptable and right-minded and good, if you vary and challenge it in any way, that they are so quick to expel you. And I think that's exactly what we saw in terms of the Obama White House action. I'm also blocking on
Shirley
the name.
Shirley Sherrod,
mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's what happened with me at NPR. You know, so to me, this is part of the problem that you feel like, you know what, I want to be a member of the club, you know, or in this current media universe where you have to be a conservative or a liberal, and being in the middle is like, you know, being a skunk and getting run over on the yellow line in the middle of the road. Everybody's running to one side or the other to claim that they are, you know, true red or true blue. And the idea then of honest discussion, of simply saying what's on your mind, in the case of Shirley Sherrod saying, you know, she had entered into this job with some racial preconceptions and then come to see that, in fact, poor whites and poor blacks were in the same boat. But all of a sudden, it's taken out of context. And even before the White House can say, or even before the conservatives can say or do anything, the White House reacts out of fear and fires her. I think that's quite similar. Again, her comments taken out of context, because she goes on to tell a tale of redemption in which she comes to, you know, understand how common we are across racial lines. But before then, the White House throws her out the door.
You know, I mean, you're looking at both sides of this. Conservatives, as you described earlier today, Juan, maybe unwilling, unable within the confines of political correctness in their camp to talk more openly about immigration. You can obviously find that at the other end of the political spectrum as well. Here's a little bit from, this is from Jon Stewart after he was on Fox News Sunday. And here he is criticizing Chris Wallace for what Stewart said was a biased edit of his interview. And I want to get your thoughts on this. He went on to share, Jon Stewart did, his thoughts on what he called Fox News' narrative of conservative victimization.
And that narrative of conservative victimization is the true genius of what Fox News has accomplished. Any editorial judgment in news or schools or movies that doesn't favor the conservative view is elitism and is evidence of liberal bias. Whereas any editorial judgment that favors the conservative view is evidence merely of fairness and done to protect them from liberal bias. And if you criticize Fox for this game, guess what that's evidence of? How right they are.
Juan Williams, I don't know. I guess you won't agree with that, but I wonder how we get unmuzzled here. There's Stewart's critique of, you know, this sort of posture on the right. You've got a critique of both. You say the left is worse. How do we get out of it, Juan?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think John is talking about shows like Hannity. I don't think there's any question about it. And by the way, I had a wonderful discussion with John Stewart on his show about this book, Muzzled. And the most interesting part was this, Tom, that John Stewart said to me, you know, Fox News is the number one cable channel in America. And he thinks in the next generation, the question is, how do we take some of the techniques, some of the things that people find so attractive about Fox, and translate it into an outlet where people could go and find what they take to be the facts, the truth, absent the strong political positioning of Fox or the strong political positioning of any outlet, whether it's MSNBC or, of course, some would say NPR, but someplace where it's, you know, attractive, fast-moving, interesting, all of that.
The DNA
plus
of Fox
people have
is gonna
high
save
level
us,
of
Juan?
Credibility and trust. I'm sorry, Tom.
The DNA of Fox News is what's going to save us?
Well, you know what? Because I think that John Stewart and I agree there's a tremendous appetite in America that's unmet for credible, trustworthy news presentations. And we're looking for more of that.
Candor, no question about that. We hear his critique right there at the same time. This is a conversation that's going to go on and on. It's really interesting to hear Juan Williams' view on it. His new book is Muzzled, The Assault on Honest Debate. Try and have it right here every single day. Juan, good luck to you. We'll be listening. We'll be watching. And we appreciate you being with us today.
Well, I'm an admirer, Tom, so thank you very much for taking the risk angering for your bosses at Fox and at NPR and having me on.
This is On Point.